Blog Talk Radio.
All right, it's 11 a.m. It's beautiful outside. Spring is here, which means NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball. Football is going to be starting soon. Apparently, there's still golf going on, tennis, rugby, table tennis, and also beer pong. Let the show start. On the air, Ryan Stern along here with Randy Zelia for, I guess, an hour and a half to 2 hours of hot pipe talking sports action. I forgot the phrase there, so I just went with whatever I decided to go with. Ryan, good afternoon. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Randy. Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay. A lot of sports news. Like, nothing too gritty. You know, there's obviously the NHL season's winding down, NBA season's winding down, Major League Baseball just starting. Draft next week, by the way, next Sunday, NFL Draft Special in place of Real Sports Talk Radio, so don't be too upset that I'm going to be gone. You know, Ryan will be hosting, and I'll be behind the glass taking care of everything. So it's going to be a big deal next week. We're looking forward to it. So much going on. I was joking about the beer pong and the rugby thing in the opening of the show. For those people who are going to talk beer pong, that's awesome. No, that's not happening. So I do apologize to everyone who is listening who's excited about the beer pong talk.
You know
so
that
Ryan,
there are actually national beer pong championships. They're held in Vegas.
I said years ago that the YES Network should have picked it up when they were looking for programming, but nobody wanted to jump on board with that idea.
Yeah, they're still looking for programming.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a sponsorship. You know, you're going to have that demographic. So, you know, it's trying to find that right demographic for it. You know, Ryan, it's where to start. And I think there's only really one place you really could start, and that is with Tiger. And yes, we're starting off with golf. Tiger Woods, with everything that's happened, after a penalty, after as crazy rounds he's had so far in the Masters, he can still win this tournament. And if he wins this tournament today, we might have to solidify him. Well, he already is in that conversation of one of the greatest golfers of all time. But I think right now he might be the best if he comes back and wins this today.
Oh, absolutely. Tiger has never come – he's never won a major while trailing after three rounds. So this is going to be one hurdle that he's not used to. But if anyone can do it, I believe he can. Especially with the majority of the field not playing real terrific golf throughout the whole weekend.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And, you know, lost in this whole shuffle is Jack Nicklaus. The good old lefty seems to be not even...
Yeah, I'm sure you probably meant Jack Nicklaus, not the actor.
And we now realize how much I really do not follow golf. At that point, you know, this is why I am who I am. So with that being said, Jack's already found. I'm sorry, Phil. Phil is nowhere to be found. In this whole entire thing, Vijay Singh, we haven't heard his name in a long time. It's Tigers, and it's Tiger, then there's everybody else. It's interesting to see, no matter what the tournament, no matter where it is, it's here's who's on the leaderboard, and where's Tiger. It just comes back to, it's his sport. You're just lucky enough when you get to spend a couple minutes in the limelight with him. That's what it really comes down to. So,
like I was saying earlier, I mean, he's only, four shots off the lead. Tiger is capable, especially if he can get the back nine under control, because he's played the front nine very well so far. But the back nine has been killer for him. And what may be the end-all, be-all of him not winning the tournament is maybe one of the more accurate shots we've ever seen in a golf tournament. I mean, he nails the flag from how many yards away, and it takes a crazy bounce 75 feet away and goes into the water. And then he gets the two-stroke penalty because of an improper drop. So if you take away, you got to figure that's a four-shot swing. If that goes in the hole as opposed to hitting the flag, he gets an eagle. Instead, he shoots a double bogey. That's a four-shot swing. He would have been tied for the lead going into today's play.
And it's funny, too. You just said before, you know, Tiger's never won after, you know, trailing on the Sunday. Can you imagine? It happens at this point. You say it never happens until it happens. Well, it might just happen.
Well, right. Like I said, if anyone can do it, he can do it, especially with the way that he's been playing. If he can tame the back nine, he definitely has a chance.
So basically what you wanted to do is tame the beast. Tame the beast for this one.
Right.
Let me ask you an honest question. At the end of the day, do we look past everything that happened with Tiger and his marital affairs and his off-the-course actions? Do we look past all that now?
I do. I don't know about whether or not most of America does. I do. I want to watch Tiger Woods because he's the best, maybe the best golfer that's ever played the game. Not because he had all this off the course, all those off the course issues.
Do we look at those off the field issues way too much now in sports? At the end of the day, I personally don't care what players do off the court, off the field. I don't think it's important. I think at the end of the day, what's most important is the way they are during their sport. Like, I don't care that Allen Iverson was convicted of this and that and this and that. I care that he's scoring 30 points for my team. At the end of the day, I don't care.
And we also care that Allen Iverson doesn't care about practice.
Well, I don't care about that either. Do you care if he's practicing, or do you care that during the game, while you're there for your team, that he's out there scoring 40 points?
No, I don't care if he's practicing or not. I care about the great sound clips that he gives us.
Oh, it's really a no-win situation with you, isn't it? That's what it comes down to. I'm very adamant about this whole thing with Tiger. You know, what happened in his personal life is none of his business. Listen, how many people go out there and cheat on their wives and run around on their families? It happens. Those things happen. The only difference is theirs is not, ours or, you know, the other people's marital affairs is not in the national spotlight because we're not famous.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. And we put way too much focus on it, and at the same time now, we now as a society put way too much stock on where they, like, they're blaming Tiger's downfall on the fact that he, you know, for all of his off the course troubles. That had nothing to do with it. He just got into a slump. And, you know, these guys are human too, and their personal lives take effect on them. And that's fine. But at the same time, people have to understand that if, you know, let's say Ryan, you're going through a hard time at home, and you're a hockey player, and you're struggling on the ice. You're a human being too. You know what I mean? You're a human being too. So that's what it comes down to. Tiger is playing like Tiger. It's great to see. Wow. Did you see this? Did you see this headline? James Harrison might be signing with the Bengals. Oh, God.
The Bengals. They're talking about sticking it to your former team.
Oh, God. Not only do I not want it, not only does my team, my old team does not want me, but I'm going to go to their rival. That's awesome.
Yeah. And probably the team that is closest to taking over the division. I think that going into the draft, the Bengals are the most complete team in the AFC North.
I agree with you on that. I don't think that Baltimore is going to be able to recover for all the players they lost. I think their overhaul is too big. I think it's just a little too much. By the way, we didn't do today. We didn't start off with the scoreboard from yesterday, and so that I apologize. Real quick, so let's do that real quick. From Major League Baseball, Boston beat Tampa 2-1 in 10 innings. San Francisco over Chicago 3-2. Atlanta over Washington 3-1. Cleveland over the White Sox 9-4. The Orioles beat the Yankees 5-3. So all you Mets fans out there, yes, congratulations. Detroit beat Oakland 7-3. The Mets over Minnesota 4-2. St. Louis over Milwaukee 8-0. Pittsburgh over Cincinnati 3-1. Toronto over Kansas City 3-2. Miami over Philly 2-1. The Dodgers are over the Diamondbacks 7-5. The Rockies over the Padres 9-5. The Angels over the Astros 5-4. Texas Rangers 3-1 over Seattle. Little funny moment here. One of the things we're going to talk about later in the show when we break into baseball is the Dodgers brawl with Greinke and that whole mess. We'll jump into a topic which I think is very interesting about when it's the fighting in baseball, charging them out, the unwritten laws of baseball. Definitely want to get your view on that. 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. I am one of those firm believers in that the Major League Baseball season, I just don't care until, it's wrong for me to say, I don't care until June or July, until the NBA playoffs are over. And there's baseball and then NFL offseason, which you're mostly focusing on baseball because there's not a lot going on. If you think that I'm totally off on that, Ryan, you can let me know. But beginning of the baseball season, when you have 100 and something games, it's just not a priority.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough. And I know that in September, when you're a game and a half or two games out of first, you're saying, oh, well, if we had played better in April, we would have been in a better position right now. But no one ever seems to think in April, oh, well, this game, if we lose this game, if we win this game, it's going to affect how we're playing in September. It's just so long. There's so many games to be played that the intensity definitely isn't there. It's sort of like going through the motions, trying to make sure that you're in shape as opposed to winning a championship.
I agree, and it's one of those. I'm very hard on Major League Baseball. I think there's any sports that deserve to cut games down, it is the Major League Baseball. I want to switch gears to hockey real quick. I'm looking at the Eastern Conference standings. This might be the end of what the New Jersey Devils, the defending Eastern Conference champions, 40 points, 6 points behind the eighth place New York Rangers. The Rangers, I think, Ryan, and this is coming as, you know, you're a Rangers fan, so it's going to be a little bit of a different view from you, but being a Rangers fan, do you consider this season to be somewhat of a disappointment?
If we didn't have the expectations that every single writer in hockey was picking the Rangers to win the Cup, if those expectations weren't there, I'd say that it's not so much a failure or that we haven't lived up to expectations. But just because you're coming off being the number one seed in the East last year and bringing in a player like Rick Nash, having other stars on the roster, having the goalie who won the Vezina last year. Yeah. I mean, the fact that we're fighting for a playoff spot, it's tough. It's a little bit, but there's just so many things that that can go wrong in a shortened season. Remember, if we're in a regular season, we're the Rangers would be exactly halfway through their schedule, as opposed to having seven games left. The Rangers started off with probably one of the hardest schedules in the NHL, and they're getting rewarded right now with having an easy finish. And I don't know if any of you watched last night's game between the Rangers and Islanders, but that was one of the top five regular season games I've ever watched. That game last night had more intensity than a lot of playoff games that we've seen. There was great goaltending. There was offensive chances. The defensive pressure that was put on by both teams was just outstanding. Both goalies were playing out of their mind, and it took a perfect pass and a perfect shot to win it in overtime. The Islanders are going to be a team that not many teams are going to want to play. I mean, right now, they're a point ahead of the Rangers. The Rangers do have a game in hand. They're a point ahead, and they are sitting in the seventh spot. If the season were to end right now, they would be playing Montreal. Now, Montreal is one of the better stories in the league this year. They were picked to finish last in the conference, and now they're in second. I guarantee you they don't want to play the Islanders. The Islanders just play a very high-pressure type of game, and they're a tough team to match up against.
Islanders making the playoffs this year, surprise you whatsoever?
Yes. I thought they were still a year away. I knew that they had a lot of young talent on the team. I didn't think that the defense was going to be able to hold up. I didn't think that Nabokov was going to be able to play the way that he has played so far this year. I thought that they were a year away. Am I super shocked? No, I'm surprised. Where I do think that they may get hurt in the playoffs is their lack of experience in their defense. You do have players like Mark Streit and Lubomir Vyshnovsky who do have experience, but that's pretty much where it ends. And I think that may be their biggest downfall when it comes to playoff hockey.
At the end of the day, who do you think is going to be really pushing the NHL playoffs? Who's going to be the favorite in the East?
Well, I mean, Pittsburgh's going to be the favorite in the East because of, one, their record. They're still winning games without Sidney Crosby in the lineup. They were winning games without Evgeny Malkin in the lineup. So they're definitely going to be the big-time favorites. Right now, they would be squared off against the Rangers in the first round. And I know Pittsburgh, through the first two games of the year, they completely owned, or the first three games of the year between the teams, they owned the Rangers. I think they outscored them something like 15-2 or 15-4 in their first three games. And then they played a home-and-home last week, and the Rangers really sort of picked up their momentum that they had been playing well and sort of figured out how to play against Pittsburgh. They won at the Garden. They manhandled them at the Garden. I think that it was a 6-1 victory over the Pens. And then the Penguins won in a shootout in Pittsburgh 2 days later. So it's good. That would be a very interesting matchup. If I'm the Rangers, I would love to finish in the sixth spot because I think even though as hot as Washington is, I'd rather play Washington over the Penguins, and I want no part of Montreal. The Rangers just do not match up well against Montreal. They scored in three games, they scored one goal against them.
What about out west?
Out west, I mean, you're looking at probably Chicago being the heavy favorite, maybe not as heavy as Pittsburgh because of the pretty much the strength of a lot of the teams. The West seems to have, I mean, when you're looking at the former, that the defending Stanley Cup champions, they're sitting in the four spot right now. And a team that no one wants to play is going to be the St. Louis Blues. The St. Louis Blues, they were built by John Davidson, who went on to Columbus and now has Columbus, a team that has been the worst team in the sport for 5 years, and they're tied for the final playoff spot. So John Davidson really is showing himself to be one of the top executives in the game by building up two perennial bottom dwellers into playoff contenders. But Chicago and Anaheim are probably going to be your two favorites out West.
Okay. It's one of those things now where I think we're now at a point where the NHL needs a new face. I think Sidney Crosby got banged up a little bit too much. I don't know if you agree or disagree on that. He got banged up a little bit too much, and I think he's not the face of the league.
You're asking the wrong person. For me, if there's one player in the league that I dislike the most right now, it's going to be Sidney Crosby. Now, one, I respect the hell out of him. I know when he's on the ice, he's the best player in the game. The reason why he's the best player in the game is because not only does he show it in himself, but he makes everybody else that he plays with better. I mean, he brought they matched him up with two perennial third line players in Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis. And they're both in the top 10 or top 15 in points in the NHL because they were playing with Sidney Crosby and he made them better. He also had an effect on James Neal, who's near the top of the NHL points list. That being said, he's the biggest whiner and the biggest crier in the game of hockey.
That's funny.
I really think that with the way that Washington has been playing over the last couple weeks and with the way that Alex Ovechkin has just soared, I think he's scored something like 19 goals in his last 16 games. He's been off the charts. I think he would be the NHL's favorite to be the new face of the league. I also think that they wouldn't mind if it were a goalie.
Okay. Let's look at the playoff matches. Unlike the NBA, the playoffs in the NHL, if, let's say, top seed wins a round, they play the next, they play the next lowest seed, correct? It's not like where it's the NBA where the winner of the 1-8 plays the 4-5, no matter what.
There's reseeding. Yeah, there's reseeding in hockey.
Right. So for example, right now Pittsburgh's number one, and they have a 7-point lead over Montreal. So they would play if Pittsburgh plays the Rangers in round one, and Montreal plays the Islanders in round two, and the Islanders beat Montreal, and Pittsburgh beats the Rangers, Pittsburgh would take on the Islanders in round two.
Yes.
Okay. That's so. Just right now, you have. I'm going to go over the matchups, and you tell me who would win. By the way, the Devils, just to finish talking about the comment about being so many points behind, they lost 9 straight games.
Right. Of those 9, 4 of them were in overtime, so they did get 4 points, which is like winning 2 games. But it's clear how much they miss Ilya Kovalchuk. I mean, they just cannot seem to find a way to put the puck in the net.
Yeah, this is not an easy time for the New Jersey Devils. And they were sitting there saying they were going to hold out Marty until he came back for the playoffs. I think at this point, it's just it's too late.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're, it's no coincidence that the Devils have lost 9 games in a row, and Ilya Kovalchuk has been out for 9 games.
Yeah. Folks, yes, you are listening to Real Sports Talk Radio, 760-283-0846. We are talking NHL hockey. We're going to jump into the Kobe Bryant situation a few minutes. I know Ryan can't wait for that. We're going to talk about Kobe, his injury, his timetable for return, also break down the NBA playoffs, preview some of the big games today, as well as, you know, we were clawing for some guests, and we'll talk about some of the people we tried to get and what we really have going on for today. The other thing that I found I wanted to talk to you about, last weekend I went to WrestleMania. I know you want to know about that experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Well, let's do that real quick, get that out of the way. I went to WrestleMania. I went solo. First off, if you've ever gone to a huge event like that, you always want to go with somebody. I ended up on my own. And it was very interesting. It was very 80,767 was the official attendance. It could have been a sellout, but there was a seat open next to me. just saying. Overall, it was an unbelievable show. The atmosphere was amazing. The fans wanted to be there. I think at the end of the day, the show it disappointed a little bit. There was a lot of things they didn't do that they've done in past years, like the skits backstage, and they didn't even do the America the Beautiful that they always do every single year. So it was like, okay, and then the next night at Raw was absolutely crazy. But one thing I did notice about WrestleMania, the one thing I sort of forgot in the back of my head was how many people traveled across the world, not across the country, but across the world to be at MetLife Stadium. I was talking online with people who were from Ireland. They were from Ireland. I said, how long are you in for? They said, we're here for a couple of days. We're here for WrestleMania. We came in for Access. We came in for Monday Night Raw. We're leaving on Tuesday morning. And I said, how much did it cost you to be out here? Their exact words, this is the part that's going to make you laugh. They spent close to $2,000 American money to be there for 4 days.
Wow.
It's crazy. I
have a pretty funny WrestleMania story. WrestleMania 20, which was at Madison Square Garden, I brought my brother. It was part of a birthday present for him. And so we're sitting in the garden. When the Undertaker came out, all of a sudden the lights go out and something hits me in the head. The level above us, there were people from New Zealand, and they were waving their New Zealand flag, and they dropped it, and it landed on my head. they wanted me to go up a level, bring them their New Zealand flag. Needless to say, I have a New Zealand flag at my house.
it's good to see you didn't buckle under the pressure or anything of giving back the flag.
But I mean, that's New Zealand. You got to think that's a couple $1,000 just for the flight.
Yeah, it's crazy that the wrestling fans go. And listen, the show didn't disappoint. Like you go there, you want to see. I guess what's really changed for me about pro wrestling is because there's a pay per view every single month. WrestleMania just feels sometimes like it's another show, and like if you look at it, I felt like it was the better pay-per-view compared to it being the biggest show of the year. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I wanted
to I remember when it used to be Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series. That was it.
Right, and that's what it should be. And everything else should be a build-up for that. I think when you have a new pay-per-view every single month, you have no time to really build a story, and there's no real... And there's also, right now, there's also no connection to the characters. You know what I mean? Like who's really, if you're a fan today, there's no real connection to a guy like Zack Ryder or, I'm trying to think of, if you look at I said this a couple years ago.
What about someone like a Ryback?
Well, I call Ryback the Goldberg ripoff because that's what he is. It's a ripoff of Goldberg. Goldberg was a great concept years ago, a concept made by World Championship Wrestling. He just went out there, beat everybody within 30 seconds, and then he moved on. It was easy. It was quick and easy. It was painless. You know? My general opinion now, and there's not a lot of characters you can connect with. And here's something that's very scary. This 2 years ago, for WrestleMania 27, I was at the gym. I saw a commercial on television to order WrestleMania. WrestleMania 27. And the first seven clips were Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Undertaker, The Rock, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and then John Cena. So you're promoting guys you promoted 10 years ago for WrestleMania.
Right.
But so you're doing that today. Does that make any sense? Do you have that little faith in your current product? Do you have to promote guys you promoted 10 years ago?
Well, you got to figure, I mean, what do you think the fan base is now compared to what it was 10 years ago?
It was kids.
Do you think it's bigger now? Do you think it was bigger then?
I think it's bigger now. Problem was you can call whatever the reason is why they did it, but what they did was Linda McMahon was doing this whole politics, you know, she was trying to become the state senator for the state of Connecticut. So by doing that, becoming a state senator or trying to become a state senator, by doing that, what you're doing is you're causing more. You have to, you know, all the attention is going to be on that product, so it's going to be all. You know what I'm saying here. You can't have chair shots. You can't have all these other things going on. You can't even have all these types of real problems. They made it a very PG oriented project. Product, whereas for years it was very edgy, borderline. There's not one thing they didn't really touch. They even touched necrophilia, if you remember that.
Oh, Jesus.
Your reaction just said it all. Yeah, they even touched necrophilia. They touched, you know, WWE with necrophilia. They did. They were very edgy. They pushed the bar. Now they don't push the bar anymore. And now your fan base is wishy-washy. It's half kids and half that really smart audience who looks up everything on the internet. So now you have a problem. And they renamed that whole thing the Attitude Era. I don't know if you really can do that, but you know that was the, you know, Ryan, that was the era we grew up in, was the Attitude Era.
Right.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and those guys. It's changed. So,
question for you. If you had to rank the top three wrestlers popularity-wise over the history of their career, who would you put them? How would you rank them?
I'd go Stone Cold over Hogan briefly. I think there was, when Austin was at his peak, there was nobody popular. Everybody knew who Stone Cold Steve Austin was. And Hogan number two. And I still think you put The Rock number three.
Over someone like a Shawn Michaels,
yeah,
who did it for so long.
Yeah, I look at it like this, and I say that when you say WWE, as a casual fan, what's the first name that comes to your mind?
I mean, for me, it was Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior.
Or let's put it even another way. When you say pro wrestling, what are the first names you think of? Usually it's Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, maybe even Ric Flair. You're not talking
right.
John Cena. You're not saying John Cena's name.
Right.
No, you're certainly not saying CM Punk. you know, you have, I think you have those legendary names. You have Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Andre the Giant. Then you have that next tier guys where you have, like, the Triple H's of the world. You have, there's some guys out
Macho
there.
Macho Man.
Macho Man. Like, there's that next tier. And it's just, who are you putting in those next tiers? And I'm a big fan. I like John Cena. A lot of people don't. I like John Cena because of the work he does with all these kids. He does the Make-A-Wish stuff. And I wish you would have been able to hear at WrestleMania the Let's Go Cena Sucks chant. it was absolutely crazy on how that crowd was so... Like, John Cena said it great in an interview. He says, it's so ass-backwards. He would go out there, he'd be booed out of the building, but his merchandise sales would be the top one of the night. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, tell me how it gets made sense. If you're the top guy, if you're going out there and you're being booed out of the building, the whole crowd is telling you, we don't like you. We don't like you. Stop. We don't want anything to do with you. Type of attitude. But we are going to buy your merchandise, and it's almost like with Shawn Michaels in Montreal. You know, it's the Houston Brett, and they smile when they say, because they know. You know, it's like an ongoing joke. They don't do that anymore. But you know, I'm trying to figure out how that makes sense to you. Please explain to me how that makes sense to you.
Because what if they're booing somebody that much, it's because they are that popular, and it's such a passion for them. And I guarantee you that the people that do like him are the people that are going to buy the merchandise just to shut up the people who are booing him.
I'm not sure if I agree with that one, but I just feel at this point they're at a crossroads because they don't know where to go. And if you would have heard the crowd at the Mania, it was, you know, let's go Cena sucks. And then if you watch Raw the next night, man, it was the crowd was so crazy. During a match with Randy Orton and Sheamus, the crowds were cheering for ECW, Rob Van Dam, Randy Savage. You know, you heard these chants, and you're like, none of this makes sense. Because the crowd was bored with what they were seeing in the ring. Like, if you watch the tape, even the announcers acknowledge it. JBL, Michael Cole, and Jerry Lawler, the crowd started chanting for all of them, too. It was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen on television. It was, as you said, watching WWE for as long as I have, I'd never seen anything like that. Let's switch gears a little bit here to Kobe Bryant and the NBA. By the way, I'm sorry, NHL games tonight, Chicago at St. Louis, Tampa Bay at Buffalo, and Detroit at Nashville. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. I apologize. If you're a hockey guy, I don't want to do that to you. Real quick, today's NBA schedule, Chicago is at Miami. I really like Chicago in that game. Brooklyn's at Toronto. Indy's at New York for a really big game. Cleveland is at Philly. Portland's at Denver. Dallas is at New Orleans. Sacramento at Houston. And the Spurs at the Lakers. Kobe Bryant is now out for 6 to 9 months. Some are asking whether he should even bother at all. What do you think?
And there was all the talk about whether or not he was going to have the desire to come back. Even before the injury, I am not a Kobe Bryant fan at all. Never have been, never will. Again, just like the Sidney Crosby thing, I respect him immensely and know he's probably one of the top 10 to 15 players of all time. Doesn't mean I like him. I just think of him as this arrogant, cocky, nasty man. Now, I know a lot of that comes from his desire to win, But there are some times where I don't see the fine line.
Kobe Bryant is a, I think, we talked about replacing the great Michael Jordan from the 90s. I think Kobe Bryant was the closest one to that, to say who the next Jordan was. I think that's, you know, that's the truth. I don't think there's a bigger competitor in the NBA than Kobe Bryant. LeBron James might be the best all-around gifted player in the league, but Kobe has that mentality like Michael had of, you're going to have to kill me to take the ball out of my hands in the clutch. So,
right.
I personally feel that Kobe was going to be back next year. That part never doubted me. It's whether he was going to play the year after his contract was up. You know, what was it going to be, a one-year deal? I don't know if you noticed, but Kobe's making $30 million next year. That's half the Lakers' payroll. You know what I mean? That's a lot of money. So now you have him under contract. He wants to be ready for opening day next season. And now let's talk about the short-term picture. What does that do? What does that do for the Lakers' playoff chances of making the eighth seed?
Well, considering that their real only competition for the eighth seed is the Utah Jazz, who at times can't get out of their own way, they still have enough talent on the roster to make the eighth seed. Now, nobody was going to give them any chance of beating either Oklahoma City or San Antonio in the first round. And now I just think it's a foregone conclusion.
Well, I think at this point, first off, playing Oklahoma City, I don't think they have a chance. Kobe Bryant, when he was moving the ball around, when he was passing the ball, the team actually played a lot better, obviously. Team looked like they actually focusing on Dwight Howard. Team looked like there was actually going to be a very competitive team in the Western Conference. Very interested to see how this whole thing now plays out with Kobe's injury, how it's going to really play out as far as, do they actually have a shot to make any noise without Kobe, without Meta World Peace. So now you're looking at Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, and a bunch of, you know, guys like the Antoine Jamesons of the world. If you're a Laker fan, you never thought you'd ever say that, would you?
No, I know that's his now given name, but can we just call him Ron Artest? I mean, when Chad Johnson, for that year or two, changed his name to Chad Ochocinco, did you actually call him Chad Ochocinco, or did you still call him Chad Johnson?
Chad Ochocinco, I got used to calling him Chad Ochocinco. I stopped calling him Chad Johnson a long time ago. By the way, he's a guy, you know, we talk about guys like Tiger Woods getting second chances. You know, what point do we look at him and say, you know, give him a second chance? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but didn't Miami give him that second chance? Because I think that with how his career ended in Cincinnati, it was definitely on the rocks. And then he went to New England. And could not get on the same page as Tom Brady. They were complaining that he had such little knowledge of the playbook that it set him back 6 weeks, and by then he was already being surpassed on the depth chart. So pretty much everybody was just blacklisting him because he couldn't make it work with Tom Brady. And then Miami comes, they give him that chance, and he blows it with, again, another off-the-field issue with his wife of a couple weeks.
Right, and I think at the same time, do you... do you ever, at that point, give the opportunity to a guy like that again, who is a talented receiver, just like Terrell Owens, and you know, give him that type of opportunity to show that he can show his love for football and inspire. Problem is, when you get to a certain point in the National Football League, like I look at a guy like Ahmad Bradshaw. Ahmad Bradshaw will never be that superstar running back again. Brandon Jacobs can go sign on with the team now, but they'll never have that success again.
Right.
Is that because at that age, when you're on the other side of 30, you're competing with a bunch of hungry guys. Like, I thought Chad Ochocinco was watching that Hard Knocks, the way he was behaving in Miami. He was a good thing for them. He was pushing the defenders on how to cover, you know, good wide receivers. He was doing a great job before all that.
Right, but also on Hard Knocks, you also got to see how his ability as a wide receiver has decreased. He wasn't able to get open. He wasn't able to catch passes when they were being thrown to him.
Yeah, no, you're 110% correct. He was still struggling, but there was still a good place for him because he was being helpful. He was being productive. And a guy like, you know, it's funny. I watch First Take in the morning. I enjoy listening to Stephen A. I enjoy listening to Skip Bayless and talking about Terrell. They had both Terrell Owens and Chad Ochocinco on. Terrell seemed a lot more humble. Terrell looked like a guy who felt bad about his stops and about what he can and can't do, still do, and he wanted another chance. And Chad Ochocinco made himself look 10 times worse than he helped himself.
Right, and I mean, when he was with Cincinnati, I was a big fan of his. I was a big fan of Chad Johnson. I thought that he was a little on the brash side, but it was I think he was having fun. And he was one of the better wide receivers in the game at the time. He was putting up all-star numbers, Pro Bowl numbers. But then it became too much about him. And when it became too much about him and not having fun, but just about, again, you know, the cliche, it became about the name on the back instead of the name on the front, even though there aren't really names on the front of football jerseys. But it became about the name on the back with him. And you had the time where he was still known as Chad Johnson, and he had Carson Palmer rip off that little, the nameplate, and it showed the Ochocinco, and he had the coat that said Future HOF. Then it started to become a little bit of a circus. And once it started to become of a circus, that's when he started decreasing as a wide receiver.
I think Chad Ochocinco deserves one more crack at it.
Yeah, he probably does. I just don't know if he still has the physical ability to give a team what they need.
Does Terrell Owens deserve another shot?
That's a tough one. Terrell's gotten more chances than Chad has. And being a Giant fan, of course, I never had any hatred for the Bengals. Terrell Owens played for the 49ers and the Cowboys. Oh, two of the teams that I dislike most in all of sports. And with what he did the day, remember when he caught the touchdown pass in Dallas when he was playing for San Francisco, and went to the star and did that like that shine on me thing.
Yeah. That was awesome.
I would have loved to be the player that ran up to him and just blindsided him while he was on the star, even though I hate Cowboys.
I personally, I love that. Real quick, some other quick news and notes from the NBA.
I apologize, that was my fault.
No, that's fine. By the way, next week I think we're going to still try and have a show. We'll have two shows. We're going to have one being the NFL draft preview, and then the other one being Real Sports Talk Radio. We're going to have Pat Williams, the owner of the Orlando Magic, is confirmed for next Sunday.
That's all. Awesome.
He's going to come on with us, talk about the status of the team. There was a news report that he and Dwight Howard actually had a great conversation, and Howard would be, after this season, Howard would be interested in possibly returning to Orlando. So we'll definitely be able to get it. Be very, very interesting to see how that one pans out. Other news, obviously Kobe Bryant out 6 to 9 months after Achilles surgery. Chicago Bulls, Richard Hamilton suspended today, will not play against Miami. Kevin Love vows to come back stronger than ever from his surgery. You want to talk about a guy who just hasn't had any luck. That Minnesota Timberwolves, who they predicted was going to probably make the playoffs this year, just struggling. There's no... They just struggled. Between
yeah.
Ricky Rubio and... You know, you had Ricky Rubio, Brandon Roy, Andre Kirilenko, Kevin Love, and they just... Rick Adelman just couldn't catch a break, and... they're going to recover. Eddie Jordan, a former Nets assistant coach, former head coach of the Washington Wizards, and former coach of the Sixers, is going to be taking the Rutgers job. That's good because he's a Rutgers alum. It's going to be very interesting to see how that program recovers. What was your take on the whole Rutgers situation?
Mike Rice deserved to be fired. It was an absolute... As someone who coaches on the high school level, it was an absolute shame, and it sickened me to watch what he was doing in practice. Yeah, sometimes practices need to get overheated. Sometimes you need to make some sort of statement. That's not the way you make a statement. I'm sorry. That is absolutely not the way you make a statement. He deserved to be fired. Tim Pernetti, I don't see why he felt... I mean, I know why he felt that he had to resign because of pressure from within the university. Should he have felt that pressure? Absolutely not. He did exactly what he needed to do in order... to make the situation right. He went to his supervisor. He went to the president of the school. He wanted to do something to get Mike Rice righted. That was a little bit of a shock to me when he was detached from Rutgers.
I thought the whole situation got out of control. From what I was getting was that a lot of that footage was compiled over the last... It felt like it was like a daily... Not that I'm condoning his behavior, but it looked like that was all compiled footage.
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely was. It wasn't one practice. It wasn't like it was. That was what was going on for 2 hours a day, every day. That's not what was happening. He just happened to put together 2.5 minutes of the worst footage.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Right. And the fact that he was able to have the guts to try and ask for $1 million to not show that. No, I mean, this day and age with social media, with the even just the mainstream media, you know something like that is going to get out. There, you cannot blackmail a major university this day and age. Because if you could, Penn State would still be in good standing.
No, it's true. It's 110% correct. And you know, me personally, I used to coach high school basketball, and you never throw basketball at kids. You never yell at them. Like they don't even really do that type of thing at the pros. And you know, I didn't like what Mike Rice's answers were either. Because Mike Rice was basically saying, you know, why would you do that? He's like, I don't know. He's like, I don't remember. He's like, I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember. That was that type of attitude where you're just in there going, really? That's what you really have to say to defend yourself? Really? That's, you know, that's not really the type of answer that's going to really get you the win of the battle of the court of a public appeal.
Right.
You know, that's you need to step up and be a little bit smarter with that. And I don't know. I have a hard time, you know, buying into. You know, I didn't buy his pity party.
I'm not so sure that it was a pity party. I don't think that he was ready to speak when he spoke, and he was making things up as he went and pretty much said what he thought people would want to hear.
Yeah,
he did it outside of his home. It's not like it was a planned press conference. It was in the driveway of his house.
The driveway was, and not only that, but I think we said this last week too. Rutgers was in a situation where their basketball program is beyond pitiful. Their football program is the real deal. This is not the type of publicity you really want to go with.
Right, and you know what? I feel sorry for the football program. Because, you know, in some ways that the basketball program, what happened with them, is going to negatively affect them somehow. And with what Greg Schiano did to basically bring Rutgers from being one of the worst programs in NCAA history, NCAA Division I history, and bringing them to Big East prominence, and now they were able to make the move into the Big Ten. I mean, when you're talking about football, Big Ten is the second best conference in the nation. I don't think it's even close, and I feel bad for them. I feel bad for someone like an Eric LeGrand, who has done so much after what happened to him with his paralysis, and to bring positive light to the university with what he's done for foundations. I feel bad for people like that.
As do I. That Rutgers football family is very very close. Everyone from Greg Schiano down to Ray Rice to just to everybody. You know, they're all very tight. In fact, I was with that tight-knit group a couple of weeks ago. We went to that event, and all the Rutgers guys, they all like to come out and hang out with each other.
Right.
That's what they do. That's their gig, and that's their – I don't want to say that's their bag, but, you know, that's what they like to do. So with that being said – we have about a half hour left. Let's open up the floor. What else would you like to talk about, Mr. Stern? What topic would you like to jump into today?
I would actually like to get into a little bit of NFL free agency.
Okay, let's go for it. Who's left?
You have some decent names with Harrison coming off the board, I mean, probably one of the bigger names is Ahmad Bradshaw. What team do you see as being, I guess, a great fit for him?
I honestly, believe it or not, I still think that he's going to end up back with the Giants. As crazy as that sounds.
I don't think it is that crazy to believe. What the only thing that I am cautious about is whether or not the Giants will have enough cap room to fit him in, along with they're looking at other wide receivers. I know that they're looking at someone for the kicking game because they're expecting David Wilson to be the full-time ball carrier. So I know they were looking at Julian Edelman from the Patriots, who I thought would have been a great fit. They're looking at Josh Cribbs from Cleveland, who I think will be a great fit. And I think that that is more of a priority for them than bringing back someone like Ahmad Bradshaw. Now, if Ahmad Bradshaw says to them, give me the veteran minimum and I'll come back, I can see him coming back. But I do think that I know Bradshaw is scheduled to make a second visit with the Steelers. I think when it's all said and done, he ends up in Pittsburgh.
I see that actually being a pretty good fit for him.
Because remember, Pittsburgh did lose Rashard Mendenhall to the Arizona Cardinals, and they outright cut Chris Rainey. So all they're left with is Isaac Redman and I can't think of their other running back, but it's not even someone who has really made his name. Now, one of the bigger stories this week in free agency was the New England Patriots signing Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders to an offer sheet. This is a pretty big deal because the Steelers already lost Mike Wallace. And now the Patriots put in an offer of a $2.5 million offer sheet to someone who was tagged at a third round level. So that's almost, it's like 2.5 times what the Steelers were going to offer with the third round tender. And I believe the Steelers have until midnight tonight to decide on whether or not they're going to bring him back. If they don't bring him back, they're going to be left with Antonio Brown, who has really made a name for himself. He was drafted in the 6th round the same year that the Steelers drafted Antonio Brown in the 3rd round and has surpassed him on the depth chart. So the Steelers will be left with Brown, and then a combination of Plaxico Burress and Jericho Cotchery. And that'll be it. That'll be all the wide receivers they have on their roster.
You know, it's very scary. So we talk about second chances. Look at Plaxico Burress trying to make the best of that situation.
Yeah, and it was the perfect place for him. It was the place where he was brought up in the NFL. He was drafted by the Steelers. He made his name as a Steeler. It was also not the place where he shot himself in the leg, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I didn't think the Jets were going to be a good fit for him when he signed with the New York Jets.
No.
I think that at this point in time, you know, if I look at a guy like Plaxico, do you really want, you know, these wide receivers that were stars, but 6 or 7 years ago, they're, you know, it's a young crop of guys. A couple of years from now, you know, Megatron is going to be sort of, I don't want to say second new, you know, second fiddle, but look at a guy like Andre Johnson. You have Calvin Johnson, you have Andre Johnson, Andre being out in Houston and Calvin being in Detroit. Those guys are, I have only a couple of years left of real, as far as market value being the top at their position.
Right. I think Calvin has a little bit more left than Andre does. I think they were drafted in the same year, if I'm not mistaken. Calvin has been healthier over the course of his career. He's been more productive over the course of his career. Not to take anything away from Andre Johnson, who, when he's been on the field, has been a phenomenal football player.
I agree. I like Calvin Johnson. Excellent player, just as good as a human being that stays out of trouble. I also like Andre Johnson. I don't think Andre Johnson gets a lot of love. He doesn't get enough love, let's put it that way.
The reason why I don't think he gets enough love is because he's had to do it all by himself. He has never had anybody who has been able to play opposite him. They've been searching for that second receiver to give him more looks, and they just have never been able to do it. That's a team.
That if you want to bring in a T.O. or a Calvin Johnson for a second opportunity and let them know, you know, you can...
Chad Johnson.
Yeah, Chad Johnson. I apologize, Ryan. I know this is... you're working with a very inexperienced sports person. Now, I think it's one of those things, too. Like, you can bring in a guy like Chad Johnson. You can bring in a guy like a Terrell Owens, put them with a guy like Andre Johnson and see if they can, just decide whether if you want to take that shot for your locker room because you think that these guys are going to be able to pan out and work in that favor for you. It's a real. I'm trying to think of some other names of free agents that right now who are available. You have guys on the defensive side like Mike Boley from, you know, we're very giant heavy in this area because of the way they are, for where, you know, because where we're located, where they're located. Boley is not going to get picked up.
I was listening to the NFL radio on Sirius. And they were saying how many veteran players are getting mad at Damore Smith, who's the head of the NFLPA, pretty much because they were forced into the lockout last year. And when the CBA was signed, it was supposed to benefit the veterans over the rookies. Veterans are still not getting signed, and teams are going to look for the NFL draft to build through as opposed to signing a veteran. Because of the new new rookie pay scale, where you're going to be paying your rookies next to nothing. Unless you're a top 10 pick. I mean, if you have your full complement of draft picks, so you have seven picks and you're picking at the middle of the round, you really only have to put aside $3.5 to $4 million of cap room to sign all of your draft picks. Where there are some veterans who are going to ask for that $3.5 to $4 million just to pay them. And I personally believe that Damore Smith is on his way out as the head of the NFLPA.
Oh, that's a given. I think that's a given at this point. Also, want to add one other part to that. We have, you know, our good friend who's we're going to be doing a online journal leading up to the draft for backsportspage.com. We had a, I'm not going to name the name, the agent's name or the company. We were discussing about the NFL pay scale and how it works for agents and players. If you're the last pick in the NFL draft, you're making about $400,000 a year. You know, in the NFL,
I think $390,000 is the league minimum.
And then you also get like a signing bonus for a draft pick of like $40,000. Now you think that these agents are making a lot of money? They're not. The agents are making 5% of their salary. So, but what he was telling me was that when you sign these guys out of college, you have, as a company, your company has to pay for the training. Pay for their training, so they get a practice facility for them, and that's about, you know, that's about $40,000. They give the player a stipend to live on, which is about $2,000. I believe it's $2,000 a week or $2,000 every, you know, something like that. It's somewhere in that $2,000 range. So you said, you know, if they get drafted late in those last couple of rounds, and they're only getting about $400,000, you're only getting 5% of that, and the agency's, you know, shifted all that money out to, you know, invest it into this player. So you're investing $60,000 into a player, and you're as an agent only getting about, and the company's only getting about
25.
Get 25,000 of that. You basically lose that money.
Right.
So it, like when I learned all this, I was shocked. And you think that these agents are making all the money. That's why you have multiple clients. But on an individual standpoint, that's why you have multiple clients. But as a company,
right,
you're losing all that type of money. He said, like, last year was the first year that the company actually made profit from it. You're losing money as an individual. You can be making a lot of money, but as a agency, it takes a while to build up that equity. Because look, you can have 10 clients, and they're all from your lower draft picks. And you're only getting about $25,000 per client, but you're spending $60,000. Those losses are going to add up.
Right.
So I wanted to get your opinion on something like that. Now that you've heard those numbers and those figures, is it worth the gamble?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's going to be worth the gamble because, I mean, it's pretty much what you put into it. If you put enough into it that you can eventually sign that guy who's going to go top 10, and if you love what you're doing, if it really sparks your interest, yeah, it'll pay off, but I'm sure you got to put in more hours, more time, more money than anyone else would have expected you to need to put in.
Right. Well, I'm also saying in this situation as a sports agent, man, look at the money issue. You know, you're making a certain amount of money. These guys are making $400,000. That's also the NFL business. The NBA and the Major League Baseball, you know it as much as I do, is a much different bag because it's guaranteed money. And so if you're
right,
making 5% of an $85 million contract, you're making your gold. Even the NBA minimum is like $750,000. You're making 5% of that, you're making close to $40,000 type of money. My math is off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks, Ryan.
it would be somewhere. Oh, actually, no. You're probably right in the 30,000 to 40,000.
Yeah, in that situation, my attitude has always been, with especially with the NBA, Major League Baseball is actually the best because there's no cap. So your guy can make
right.
A-Rod's guy is probably making close to $40 or $50 million himself. Scott
Boras.
But
Scott Boras is on another level than anybody else. And
yeah,
it's funny because you're starting to now see that the agency that Jay-Z is starting and the amount of the big names that they're starting to bring on, it's going to be competition for some of these other prominent agents.
Agreed. And the allure of Jay-Z is what you're talking about. Yeah, and I tend
right.
to agree with you. He's going to be selling his shares of the Nets now because, just like Magic. Like I'm surprised, to be honest. One of the things that really surprised me the most is how involved Magic Johnson still is with ESPN as owner of the Dodgers. I was under the assumption that he was going to be done with ESPN when he saw, when he bought the team. I'm not surprised that he splits his commitment. From what I got told, he's more of the what's the word to describe Magic's relationship with the Dodgers? He's a minority partner. He doesn't have as much
right.
money.
It's the group that he's a part of is the majority owner, which I think that he's somewhere in the 20-25% range.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And so the fact that, but he's the face. Like he'll go out there and he's the one.
Right.
Because of
the group that he's a part of, he's the one with the most notoriety, especially in the Los Angeles area.
Right, and he's the big dog in the dog and pony show of this whole situation.
Right.
So, at the end of the day, do you think having a star like that as an owner, like just like Jay-Z is going to be, an agent, is helpful? Like, is that going to help draw the clients in?
Yes. I think if you're willing to deal with the notoriety, it's going to look better for your client, and it'll also look better for yourself because they're going to want to come back to you to sign your players.
I agree. And Magic, while we're on the topic of the Dodgers, our good friend Zach Greinke. What a moron.
Really? You're taking that standpoint? I am completely pro Greinke in what happened.
I tend to disagree with you in this situation. I'm a firm believer that anytime as a pitcher, you put your hands down and you sort of give that look like, yeah, I sort of meant to do it, then I think you deserve the
It was a 3-2 pitch in a 2-1 ball game in the sixth inning. There is absolutely no way he is throwing it, Carlos Quentin. No way. No way.
I think that. I think we might have to agree to disagree on this one. I'm very pro peaks in sports. I'm pretty pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Greinke puts his shoulder down. He sort of gets what he deserves in that type of situation.
Okay, well, Right, but the only reason why he was in that situation is because Carlos Quentin thought that he's been throwing at him. Now, this isn't the first time Greinke has hit Quentin. But come on, Quentin. Open up your eyes. It's a one-run ball game in the sixth inning, and it's a 3-2 count. If he wanted to hit you, he would have done it in the first inning when there's still plenty of time left in the game, and he would have gotten you at a pitch early in the count. He wouldn't have wasted 5 pitches to you before he hit you. And Quentin took it personally, and now Greinke needs to learn how to defend himself better because he sort of took that as if he were like a red flag with a bull coming his way. But there's no way that he should have been in that situation. Quentin's got to know and understand what's going on in the game before he does that.
I agree, and I agree with that aspect. I agree. At the end of the day, I'm pro peace. At the end of the, you don't like to see too many brawls in baseball. I think it's a little ridiculous. As Frank Caliendo would say in the what's Charles Barkley, that was ridiculous, man. Ridiculous.
That's terrible.
At the end of the day, you just really want to see. You don't want to see people get hurt in sports. That's not what sports is about. Injuries happen, and when injuries happen, opportunities open up for people. Let's not pretend that that's not the truth. Let's not pretend that's the society we live in. I think that without injuries, some of the biggest stars, without injuries, Tom Brady,
right.
If Drew Bledsoe didn't happen, Tom Brady would never have been discovered. Without injuries, I don't think, I think I'll give you another example.
Kurt Warner was a grocery bagger. And then Trent Green gets hurt in the preseason, and Kurt Warner goes on to lead the greatest show on turf.
Good example. Give me more.
Mike Richter, who is the goalie of the Rangers, was brought up earlier than they wanted him to because John Van Beesbrouck got an injury. Now, Van Beesbrouck and Richter were able to play like a 1-1A. Together for a couple of years, but Richter was brought up because of an injury to Van Beesbrouck. And Richter went on to become the all-time leader in victories as the New York Ranger.
Okay. I'm trying to think of a better basketball one. I think a lot of the basketball ones would probably be more of a... I think basketball, those types of situations. Well, look at the injuries to Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony. If that didn't happen, you wouldn't have had Linsanity last year.
Right. Yeah, that's a great one.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that if that would have happened, you wouldn't have had Linsanity. And
he wouldn't be making $28 million over 4 years.
Yeah, right, with the Houston Rockets. You know, it was funny, I had a conversation really quickly with Booker T, who's from Houston, Texas, unlike his WCW days where from Harlem, New York, Harlem Heat. with that being said, I was talking to him about the Houston sports scene. I don't know, were you on the show with us when we had Patrick Creighton, who's now down in Houston doing... radio.
I was not, but I know Patrick very well. He's a very good dude, and I'm happy to see that he's doing very well with himself.
Now he's living the American dream. With that being said, Patrick and I he told me they first moved to Houston about what was going on down there. He said the Astros and the Rockets started their own cable network. So he was at a sports bar and wanted to watch the Rocky game. And he couldn't because the game wasn't on. Because it's owned by the Astros and the Rockets, so their special network. And we were talking about it and how ridiculous it is. Like, up here, the Mets and the Yankees have their own networks, and it makes sense for them to be able to control the broadcasting. And there are Mets fans across the country. There are Yankee fans across the country. There's Nets fans with this whole Brooklyn thing who, like, it's funny, you went out in Florida, and there's people wearing Brooklyn hats, and, like, have you ever been to Brooklyn? Not at all. I'm like, really? So, with all that, with that said, you know, you have fans, I can't tell you that there's a fan base, you can't go to Boston and say, oh, I'm a huge Astro fan, or I'm a huge Houston Rocket fan. You don't, it's not like Yankees, like, there's Yankee fans everywhere.
Cowboys.
So, you know what I mean? There's Mets fans everywhere. But, you know, they're not as open about their fandom as the Yankee fans are. But, yes, there are Mets fans everywhere. So, with that being said, Patrick was telling us that that situation is very difficult. So, when I had Booker T on the phone, we were talking about the Houston sports scene. And we were talking, he said, all Houston, every single time the Houston Rockets get like a star, they usually lose them because they don't want to pay the money. They never go out and get the big name stars. And I said, well, what about Jeremy Lin? And he says to me, well, you know, we had Jeremy Lin. We let him walk away. Then we, you know, and after he had a really good run, and then we signed him. So that was, you know, we went out and grabbed somebody else's star who also couldn't even play it when it really mattered last season. And I asked him about James Harden. He said, listen, the only reason Hakeem Olajuwon actually played in Houston was because he was a Houston guy. And he wanted to be here. Otherwise, nobody wants to come to Houston. They'll go to Dallas. They'll go to San Antonio. which is, to a point, is true. All right, Ryan, we are down to Sound Off. Sound Off brought to you by Uppy Custom Creations. We've been framed to your name. Please go to uppycustomcreations.net for more details. Ryan, Sound Off time. Go for it.
Talk a little bit about what the playoff run in the NHL has meant to Islander fans. We all know that I'm a big Ranger guy, and I'm farthest from being an Islander fan. But this is making New York hockey exciting. I mean, the Devils are not in the playoff picture as of right now. But they're still sort of in the mix. The fact that it's a new team for the Times, that it's the first time in, I think, 6 years that they're poised to make the playoffs. But with the Islanders and Rangers being good, I think that that's a better rivalry than the Rangers-Devils ever was. And I applaud everything that Garth Snow has done building the Islander team, and I look forward to many years of good Ranger-Islander rivalries.
Well, my sound-off is a little bit different. It's about the great Kobe Bryant. You never want to see greatness end with an injury. Mariano Rivera didn't want to end his career on an injury situation. Neither does Kobe Bryant. Do I think Kobe Bryant? I do. I do think Kobe's going to be back. I don't know if he'll be better than ever, but this pretty much summarized what the Lakers were this year, a train wreck. Mike D'Antoni is not a great coach. Everything that the Lakers have gone through with Dwight Howard, figuring out whether the personalities between Dwight Howard and Kobe Bryant can work, ends up with a season-ending surgery. Now the Lakers are in a tough role because whether they've signed Dwight Howard back or not, it all seems to fall on the shoulders of Kobe Bryant. If Kobe Bryant walks away, then the Lakers era begins. Whether Dwight Howard will be there at the beginning of the end of this Laker era is the real question. At the end of the day, if this is the end of Kobe, thank you for the memories, and thank you for the great jokes out in Colorado. Otherwise, Kobe Bryant's career is still a Hall of Famer. 5 more championships than other guys would say. For Ryan Stern, Randy Zelia, we'll see you next week for a 2-hour show half of NFL draft preview, the other half, Real Sports Talk Radio. Ryan, see you next week.
Have a good one, Randy.